The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, part of the lineup, the wonderful lineup of information that you can access 24/7 right here at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And Dr. Zamperone and I are happy to be a part of this network with The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And today we have as our guest Dr. Robert Melillo. Dr. Melillo is the president of the International Association of Functional Neurology and Rehabilitation. He is the co-editor and chief functional neurology, rehabilitation, and ergonomics executive director of F.R. Carrick Institute for Clinical Ergonomics, Rehabilitation, and Applied Neuroscience. He is the co-founder of Brain Balance Achievement Centers, and he is the author of several books, including the one we'll be talking about today called Reconnected Kids. He has devoted himself to the study and treatment of learning disabilities and behavioral disorders in children such as autism, ADHD, and Asperger syndrome. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Dr. Melillo.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be here, Ellen.
Now, we've done shows in the past, and we talked about a book you had previously written called Disconnected Kids.
Correct.
And now you have a brand new book out called Reconnected Kids.
Right.
So what's the difference?
Well, the first book, Disconnected Kids, really was designed to give parents real tools as to how to change the neurology in their child's brain. So that book was about giving parents information about what is actually happening in the brain of a child with ADHD or dyslexia or autism or other various childhood developmental issues. And with that, we also gave them tools to be able to assess their child, to be able to see if they have this problem called a functional disconnection, which is an imbalance between the two hemispheres of the brain. And by identifying that, also identifying what areas of the brain are slow or developmentally delayed. And then after assessing their child, we gave them tools as to how to do different types of exercises or activities to stimulate different areas of the brain, as well as certain nutritional approaches to help also support the brain development. So the first book was really about changing the child's brain and giving the parents the tools to understand what the actual problem is. What we found is that in working with, you know, tens of thousands of children with the book and in the centers, we're getting, you know, fantastic results, people sending letters all the time about the changes they were seeing in their children. But sometimes they also raise questions that as they notice their child's functions were improving, they also were noticing some changes in their behavior, and sometimes they didn't know if that behavioral change was good or bad. They noted that there was definitely a change going on, that the program was definitely making a difference, but that they were confused a little bit by some of the behavioral changes they were getting. So the Reconnected Kids was written to address those questions for parents to explain to them that in most cases these behavioral changes that they're seeing were actually positive changes, but to also give them tools as to how to deal with those behavioral issues, and also taking what we learn from working with children with behavioral issues and give those tools to parents, to the average parent that is struggling with behavior at home. So it really is more of a book that is designed to help parents with the changes that are happening in the brain, but also it's a book that uses neurology to help any parent that's having behavioral issues with their children at home.
So even if they did not have a specific diagnosis, looking at the way kids behave still be addressed, even if we're not dealing with a child with ADHD or ADD.
Exactly. You know, 80% of parents polled today, when they're asked if they are happy with their children's behavior, 80% of parents today say they are dissatisfied. That we're facing, in general, really severe problems at the home front in families. And families are struggling, and parents are struggling. And as I talk about in the book, Reconnected Kids, that this is the most difficult time, I think, in the history of the world to be a parent, which kind of sounds counterintuitive because we have all these advantages. But those advantages of technology make it very difficult to be a parent because we are constantly fighting for our children's attention, and we have so many things we have to fight against today: computers, iPods, video games, texting, all of the technology that's much more interesting than we are. And we have to fight against that for our child's attention, and we have all these other people with all these different ways of gaining their attention and their intellect and getting their ear and influencing their behavior, and we have to fight against that as parents. And if you don't have a plan today as to how to attack that in some way, then you're going to lose your child. And that's really kind of the simple fact that we see today. It's really a struggle for the average family.
Yes, it is. Boy, that says a lot. It's interesting because as we do this show today, we're just coming out of a big hurricane.
Right.
And so, you know, it's appropriate to discuss that, although our shows are archived, so they stay online a very long time, and people may have to think back to remember this. But why I'm bringing it up is a couple reasons. First of all, Dr. Eugene Samprone was supposed to host our show today, but he's still underwater and without electric up there in the Connecticut Hills. But also something I noticed yesterday, Dr. Melillo, which somehow feeds into our discussion here. After the hurricane passed and there was no electricity, so that meant there was no video games, there was no TV, there were no cell phones, the cell phone towers weren't really working. What I saw yesterday was amazing because I've lived in this neighborhood for 7 years and I have never seen a child outside. And yesterday, there were children swarming outside.
Right.
They were riding bicycles. They were throwing balls. They were pulling on the trees that were laying down all over the place and climbing on them.
Right.
And I said, oh, my God, I did not know children even lived in this neighborhood. Where are they all the time?
Yeah.
And this is the first time they seem to be, you know, actually doing child-appropriate activities.
Right. Yeah, that is a very significant statement you say, because, you know, way back when I was first looking at writing a book many, many years ago, over 15 years ago, when I first started to become aware of the beginning of the epidemic of ADHD and autism that was just starting. And I remember I asked a teacher who had been a patient of mine and who was been a teacher for 30 years, and I said to her, you know, not only was this a real problem, and she confirmed that, yes, there were more and more kids with real problems, but I said to her, why? Why are we seeing this increase? And she said, you know, I don't know what it is, but she said, I don't know how it works, but children don't use their big muscles anymore. She says, I watch them on the playground, and they don't run around like they used to. She said, drive around any neighborhood, You don't see kids riding bikes. You don't see them playing ball in the street. You don't see them climbing trees anymore. They're inside watching TV, watching the VCR. And at that point, we'd really hardly even had video games. And it's only gotten much worse. And, you know, this is important because it plays a critical role in brain development. And this is what we see, is that the fact that the brain is not being stimulated to grow at early and earlier ages because children are not as physically interactive with their environment and with the people around them, that actually affects and causes a delay of the right side of the brain predominantly. And this is what can lead to symptoms, especially like ADHD and other types of learning disabilities in children. So what you're saying is absolutely correct, that we're seeing this as a direct relationship to technology, because the only thing that changed yesterday was that for the first time, probably since you've lived there, all the technology was knocked out. And so naturally, kids then gravitate outside.
Yeah, because there's basically nothing left to do, so it's not
right.
The first choice activity.
Right.
Now, you said a lot of very important things there, Dr. Melillo. You talked about the fact that there seems to be an increase in these syndromes, such as ADHD and ADD, yet I see physicians being interviewed on all the time on air, and they're saying there's no actual increase in numbers, we're just having better diagnostics, and then they're linking the whole thing to simply genetics, which seems
right.
So completely out of intuitive boundaries.
Right. And actually, you know, what you're going to see is on the mainstream media or in, you know, scientific conferences, you're going to have two camps typically. And one camp is exactly what you're talking about. They say that there really isn't an increase of any of these disorders, but that it is, and that these are purely genetic problems, and that we've only become better at recognizing them, and that the numbers haven't actually increased. On the other hand, you see other researchers, which is actually making up the majority of researchers now, and which is really gaining much more steam, is there's a lot of research that shows that that's completely incorrect, that there are actually more children with these disorders than there ever was before, and it's gaining and getting more, and that because of that, you can't describe this in purely genetic terms. And in fact, there was just a recent study that came out of Stanford about maybe 4 weeks ago, which was the largest twin study that was ever done on autism. And you know that twin studies are important when you're looking at genetics, because the idea is you look at identical twins that share 100% roughly of their genes, of their genetic makeup, of their DNA, and then you have fraternal twins that on average share around 50% of genes. So what they do is they compare those two and they look and say, you know, there's a high rate of the identical twins having autism, for instance, and the fraternal twins is a much lower rate, they look at that and say, okay, well, you know, their environment is pretty similar, but the thing that this shows that it's got to be mostly genetic. And in the past, there were some twin studies that were done, and they really weren't large studies. They were very small studies, and they weren't a lot of these studies, but most of those studies clearly seemed to show that there was a high inheritance rate, meaning that there was like a 90% when one twin with identical twin had autism, the other had it, and that there was a very low rate in fraternal twins. Now, Stanford did the largest twin study. They did like 162 samples, and what they found was exactly the opposite. They found that it was much higher in fraternal twins than it was in identical twins, and in fact, they found that the genetic contribution to autism was only about 38%, and the environmental factors were 62%. So it was almost twice as significant. And this was a major study because it showed that autism is more environmental than it is genetic. And that also fits with what we're seeing, that we're seeing an actual higher number of children with autism, and that seems to be more what we're seeing out there. Although, like you said, there's a lot of people out there saying that there isn't a problem, and that really is I think not very prudent, because it's making people think that we aren't facing an epidemic when we are, and it's diverting research funds that really could be finding out what's happening.
I totally agree. I'll tell you, as a nurse, a teacher, and a parent, there is no doubt in my mind that this situation has vastly increased. And even the mainstream media that shares with us a rate of one child out of 150 seems to me to be out of bounds of anything that could be linked to strictly genetics, because how come our grandparents didn't have that kind of number of children who had difficulty?
Yeah, well, not only that, you know, one of the things that they talk about, Ellen, is they say that, well, it's 1% of the population, and it's always been 1% of the population of children. But recently, also about maybe 2 months ago, there was a major study. I was on Fox News for this, actually, because this was a major study that came out that actually talked about in Korea that they did what's called a population-based study. See, the way that we get our numbers, which is actually the CDC's most recent number, is 1 in 110 and 1 out of 70 boys in the United States. And the way they came to that number was basically through phone surveys, as you know. They call up households and they say, do you have children? Do you have a child with autism in there? And so it's kind of like doing a poll. And there's a certain amount of accuracy, but again, you can't really confirm if the person on the other side is telling you the truth or not. In Korea, they did a population-based study, which is where they literally went into the schools and counted the amount of children with autism and then extrapolated from there, which is much more accurate. And in Korea, as in the United States, South Korea, they've always thought that there was a 1% of the population had autism, with children. What they found was that there was almost three times as many children as they anticipated. They found one out of every 38 children in Korea had autism, and one in 20 boys. So that it was actually almost 2.7% of the population, as opposed to what they previously thought was 1% before they did this study. So then somebody in the United States came back and said to the CDC, what if we did a population-based study here? And they said we would probably find the same numbers or worse than South Korea. So the fact is, you know, looking at this 1% isn't accurate. We're probably at least 3% of the population and growing every year, so that there are many more children now than there ever was before.
Well, I'm looking at your book, Reconnected Kids, and we're going to talk about it in detail when we come back. But right now, we're just going to take a little break, station ID for Progressive Radio Network, and when we come back, we will continue our fascinating discussion with Dr. Robert Melillo and his newest book, among many excellent books, Reconnected Kids. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome back once again to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. You can always find out more by going to Facebook, The Natural Nurse. That's Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or naturalnurse.com, where we have all of our local classes and events listed. Almost every day we're giving a lecture somewhere in the world, and many of them are in the New York area and the tri-state area. We're having an herb walk in Connecticut, Westport, Connecticut, on September 17th, where we'll actually be gathering edible and medicinal wild plants and making them into medicine. So you can go home and bring your own tinctures, your own pain medication that you make yourself, salves, skin salves that you make yourself, smudge sticks for spiritual renewal, all kinds of herbal products that you make yourself. And, you know, that could be fun or it could be survival. So either way you look at it, you can join us. Just go online at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse, and you can check out all the classes that we're having. Our guest today is Dr. Robert Melillo. He is an internationally known author, lecturer, and researcher within the field of neurology, specializing in childhood disorders. His personal mission to find a cure for neurobehavioral disorders is linked to the many years of work that he has put into this area and has seen such groundbreaking changes in children. I feel that we're very lucky, Dr. Melillo, that you're continuing to write. And I love your textbook on neurology. Now,
yes,
of course, that's because I'm a researcher and I like reading information on that level. You can share a little bit about it with other people who like that. But I'm noticing more and more that your newer books are really user-friendly just for the average mom and dad who want to work with their own children. So that brings this information to a much broader audience.
Right. Well, you know, much as you've done in the books that you've written, which are also just fantastic, we're, you know, bringing, I think part of our job is to bring this complex information to understand it at the most complex level. But then the real challenge for us as professionals, as you know, is to bring it down to the level that the average person can not only understand it, but they can use it. And that's, you know, been a challenge because we're dealing with some of these issues. You know, autism and ADHD and many of these disorders like schizophrenia, which are all very similar, are considered some of the most mysterious disorders in all of neuroscience. And it really is something that's very intimidating, and we're talking about some of the most complex issues in all of science. And so to write this in a way that people can understand has really been, you know, a challenge, but I appreciate your input, and I think that the feedback we've been getting from parents is that they're able to use the books and really make differences. I mean, I literally get letters almost every day from different parts of the country and the world of people that are using the book itself and getting just fantastic changes, not to mention that we use a much more progressive, a much more detailed version of that in our brain balance centers, which are learning centers that are geared towards children with specific disabilities.
And I have seen so many children walk in there actually completely dysfunctional, and after a while they are completely different beings.
Yes. Yeah, we really, you know, and that has been getting better and better as time goes on. But last year there was the first major outcome study looking at the results of our program. And what this was published in the International Journal of Adolescent Medicine and Health, which is a fully indexed peer-reviewed medical journal. And what researchers did was they looked at two of our centers and took 60 children randomly selected who had been labeled with ADHD, and they followed them through our program. So the children were initially tested with behavioral tests and academic testing and motor testing, and then after 12 weeks they were reevaluated, all using standardized tests. And what the results showed was that 82% of those children no longer met the diagnosis of ADHD. So essentially, they no longer had ADHD after 12 weeks. Furthermore, there was between anywhere from a 2 to 4 grade level or more increase in multiple academic areas by standardized testing after 12 weeks as well. So, you know, not only observing the changes as you've had, but we also have documented proof at this point in time, and now we're doing a lot more research on that in the way of control studies and other studies in areas of autism and dyslexia and other learning disabilities as well, which is part of us, you know, being able to show people that we get these results, but also enabling us to perfect our results and get them better and better.
Well, when I look at the table of contents in the new book, and by the way, I suggest parents get both, the disconnected kids and the reconnected kids, and I see how they are actually very different. Mm-hmm. Disconnected kids, I have literally told hundreds of my patients about, because sometimes they'll come in with behavioral issues that can change so drastically just by a dietary change, using some herbs. But your book goes into so many things that parents can do on their own. And then when we're looking at reconnected kids, you're actually looking at behavior, and like you talked about very early on in the show, something that looks like it's quote-unquote bad might actually be good. What does that mean? Is this behavior good or bad?
Well, you know, again, what I try to do that I think is unique about what I'm adding to this, because there's very good behavioral books out there. There's been very good behavioral techniques. So what I try to add is really understanding the neurology of behavior, meaning what is behavior? Where does it come from? And how does it relate to this idea of an imbalance between the two sides of the brain? That's my unique contribution. So when we look at behavior, all human behavior really comes down to two basic aspects, what we call approach and avoidance or withdrawal. And those are the two basic platforms, meaning are we going to move towards something or away from something? And we see that the two sides of the brain control those behaviors differently. Along with behaviors, we have emotions. Emotions are what motivate us. That's where we get the term emotion. They motivate us to act or behave in one way or the other. They motivate us to move towards something or do something in a proactive way, or they get us to move away or stop doing something. And so we actually only have six basic human emotions. And three of them are what we call positive or proactive, and three of them are what we call negative. So three of them will stimulate or will motivate us to approach something. And this is anger, happiness, and surprise. Those are the three basic positive emotions, and they're associated with the left side of the brain. The right side of the brain, or withdrawal or avoidance type of where we stop doing something or we move away from something, the emotions that motivate us are sadness, disgust, and fear. They will stop us from doing certain things that might be dangerous or eating something that isn't good for us. So what we see is all behavior and all emotions are really a balance between the two sides of the brain. And normally, in most children, as they develop, what we see is that the brain doesn't develop all at once. We see that the right side of the brain develops for the first 2 to 3 years, and then we switch to left brain development for 2 to 3 years, and then back to right brain. So what we see is that normally we will favor one side of the brain, and certain behaviors and certain emotions are more predominant. That's why, like the terrible twos, really signal the beginning, you know, what we see as a lot of what these kind of approach behaviors that are happening as the left brain starts to kick in. So what we see is that all behavior and all emotions are what we call positive and negative, and there's a balance between them. They're all good, right? Emotions that get us to avoid something or get us to not hurt ourselves or get us not to eat something, those are positive, but they make us feel bad. And they may look negative, but they are useful. So what we see is that as we start to develop a child, as we stimulate their brain through the Brain Balance program, what can happen quite often is we're stimulating the right side of the brain, which is governed by negative behavior and negative emotions. And even though each stage of development there are positive and negative emotions that should develop, the child may not have developed a lot of these negative emotions or negative behaviors because that side of the brain is literally stopped in its growth. So as we start to stimulate it, the child may see a series of different negative behaviors and emotions that emerge that are positive because it means the brain is growing. It's developing as it should, but it actually makes the parent's life harder for a period of time. And that's why we need to give them tools as to how to be able to understand this so you're not concerned that it's bad, and then how do you deal with it until the brain balances out.
Okay, well, you sure use that word balance a lot. I mean, you love it so much that you actually call your centers the Brain Balance Centers.
Correct.
So what does that mean to you in terms of balancing the brain function?
Well, the brain, the way the human brain should normally work is that what makes the human brain unique is two things. One is that we have a brain that is relatively large, which means that we have, you know, a relative big brain. But the difference in the human brain is not just that we have a big brain, but rather that we have a very connected brain, a very coordinated brain. The thing that makes the human brain and human intelligence unique, one aspect, is that we can coordinate huge networks and huge numbers of cells to become active at the exact same moment of time in multiple areas of the brain, so that we can get a lot of cells active exactly at the same moment. We're the only species that can do that at that level. The other thing that makes the human brain unique is that we have what we call a very lateralized or asymmetric brain, which means the right side and the left side of the brain are completely different than one another. They do completely different and even opposite things. And the fact that we have all of these cool control centers, hundreds of different control centers on each side of our brain that control all different things, we can combine these two, these multiple areas together from the two sides of the brain, and it gives us unique abilities because we have all these different ways of combining all these different skills together, and most other animals don't have those. So the key to that, again, though, is that we need to be able to get both sides of the brain and these areas from both sides of the brain not only to become active, but they have to become active at the exact same moment of time. So it means that timing, coordination and timing between the two sides of the brain is really the critical factor. And so if we have a timing imbalance where one side of the brain is processing information faster than the other, it throws off our ability to activate all of these different areas of the brain and get the brain to work together in a coordinated fashion. And so we end up not being able to use all the different areas of our brain. And instead of using our whole brain, we only use certain parts of our brain. And this is what we see as ADHD or autism or dyslexia, or many people even believe this is what we see in schizophrenia as well. So the balance in timing and the balance in coordination between areas of the brain, especially between the two sides of the brain, is the critical factor. And that's why we refer to this as the brain balance program or the brain balance centers, because essentially that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to restore balance to the brain.
Well, we have so much great information in your new book, Reconnected Kids, Help Your Child Achieve All Kinds of Things. And you talk about the Family Empowerment Program. And what's the difference between individual empowerment and family empowerment?
Individual empowerment, you know, can take a number of different forms. But in this case, what we're looking at is we're looking at really both. We're looking at that when we look at behavioral issues, whether it's in a family that's struggling with learning disabilities or behavioral problems that are neurological, or whether it's a family that's struggling with just, you know, modern day challenges and behavioral issues, what we see is that often the problems really start with the parents. And it doesn't mean that the parents are being negligent. What it often means is that the parents aren't always on the same page. We just assume, I think in the past, our parents just seemed to wing it, right? And parents in the past seemed to wing it, and they seemed to get along with it well. But today, we don't seem to be able to get away with it. And I said that that's because we have more challenges. But what we also see is that when parent families come into us, and if they're struggling with any behavior in their children, what I often do is sit down with the parents and try to get a sense as to, you know, how connected they are. Because the first thing we know is that the leading cause of bad behavior in children is when both parents are not giving a consistent message. An inconsistency of message from the parents is the number one reason for bad behavior. So what we try to do is say, how much on the same page are you guys? And, you know, what are your expectations from your children? What do you want for your children? And what we often find is that when you talk to the parent, the mother and the father, they're on completely different pages, even if they have a great marriage and even if they're very close, that they want different things. And then they assume that their children know what they want. They assume that their child knows exactly how they're supposed to act. They assume that their child knows all the rules. But what we find is that when we ask families, you know, do your children know what you value? Like, what are the values of your family that are important? And when we also ask them, you know, what are the rules? What we, you know, we say, do your children know the rules? And they say yes. And then when we ask the children are confused because there are different rules. The mother and father may have a different interpretation of rules. One may say that you have to come in at 10 o'clock every night. And the other one says, well, it's 10:15. You know, and then what is the punishment or what are the consequences when you do something wrong? When you break a rule, they change all the time. And this changing and inconsistency leads to a lot of confusion and frustration in children, and this leads to bad behavior. So one of the first things we try to do is get the parents to be together. We get them to be consistent. We get them to sit down and say, okay, what are the rules for our family, and literally write them down as a series of rules and write down what their values are. And then they sit down with their children in a family meeting and say, okay, these are the rules, and they get the input from the children so that if the children doesn't agree with a certain rule and they think that they should come in at 10:30 instead of 10 o'clock, we listen to them, and then we all come together and say, okay, these are the rules, we all agree to these rules, and now we're all going to agree to what are the consequences if we break these rules. So now, child comes in at, you know, 10:45 and they're supposed to be in at 10:30, whether the mother's there or the father's there, they know that, okay, you broke the rule, the child knows they broke the rule, and we know these are the consequences, and everything is consistent, and it actually really changes the family dynamic. So one aspect of it is getting the family and the parents together. The other aspect is to teach the parents how to actually empower themselves individually by getting them to focus on goals and getting them to be able to become happy and positive and create a positive environment. And then once we teach them how to do that, then they sit down with their children and they teach their children how to do that. And they teach that they empower their children. So individual empowerment and family empowerment becomes, you know, one in the same.
Well, one thing that I'm finding very interesting in what you're saying, Dr. Melillo, and I do want to remind our listeners that we are listening to Dr. Robert Melillo. He's the author of many books. They're all excellent, but today we're focusing on his newest book called Reconnected Kids: Help Your Child Achieve Physical, Mental, and Emotional Balance. It's very specific. It tells you what to do. It helps you as a parent. Now, you were talking about establishing rules and boundaries as if everyone does that. Because I find when patients come to me, they seem, especially, I have to say, not to be prejudiced, but it seems to be more true of people who are sort of in the wealthier classes. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but they don't seem to be setting rules. They seem to be allowing the children to set rules. And I know with my kids, truthfully, I was a single parent, didn't have a lot of time, and I was very, very clear about the rules and what would happen if you didn't toe the line.
Right.
It wasn't like wishy-washy, but so many parents, they seem to be allowing the children to make the rules. Oh, they won't eat vegetables.
Yeah,
that's the child's rule.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. Yep. And that's a big problem. And the fact is, you know, it's interesting because when you look at autism and ADHD, as you go up the socioeconomic scale, you see higher and higher rates of autism and ADHD.
I didn't know that. That's
Yes. Fascinating. Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, certain genetic aspects that that parents tend to be more left brain by nature. But it also has a lot to do with you know, how they stick with rules and behavior, and that is a contributing factor. Doesn't cause the neurological deficit, but it means that when they go to deal with it, a child with ADHD, a child with a learning disability, they require more rules and more structure than the typical child. And when they don't get it, their behavior becomes, you know, really 10 times worse. And that's what we often see. That's why it's so important that we needed to give parents these tools to be able to deal with this, because, and if they can deal with it with a child with ADHD, then these things work with the typical child. And as you say, you know, I mean, all the time when parents come in, I'll say to them, do you have written rules for your children? And they go, no, but they know the rules. And I'll say, but have you ever actually sat down with them and discussed this in a formal setting? And do you have written rules that they can look at? And nobody does that. Almost nobody ever does that. And what they usually say as an excuse is they say, well, my parents never did that. And I usually say, well, your parents didn't have to deal with the things we have to deal with. But the fact is, your children don't know what your rules are. They really don't know what they are. And if you give them the rules and you tell them this is the consequence, they will stick with it. But you have to give them the rules. And people, for some reason, hate to sit down and write things. But when you write those rules down and actually sit down with children and they become part of writing those rules, it changes the whole dynamic of the family dramatically. And today, like I said, if you don't have a plan of attack with behavior, then, you know, it's really going to be a problem. Because even simple things like, you know this, Ellen, I mean, you know, parents don't even think about that their child goes to bed every night with a cell phone next to them. And kids are texting one another at 2 and 3 in the morning, and they're not sleeping. This never happened before, but now we have children that are so sleep-deprived because they have cell phones. And one simple rule is you don't go to bed with a cell phone. It seems obvious, but most parents never say that to their children. These are simple things that we need to look at.
Yeah, and it seems all they want is for their child to, you know, be happy.
Be happy.
But actually, that doesn't actually lead to happiness.
No,
it leads to confusion and unbalanced behavior.
You know, I go through this in my book at a certain point where I talk about how parents today, they hate to see their children suffer. But I know when I was growing up, my parents used to actually say that. They used to actually say, it's good for you to suffer. They used to actually say those phrases, right? Like, it's good for you not to get what you want all the time. And, you know, when you were in school, you know, if you didn't really try real hard and practice real hard, you got cut from your basketball team, or you didn't make your baseball team, or you didn't make the cheerleading squad, and you went home and you felt bad and it made you work harder. But now, if a God forbid a child gets cut from a sports team, parents are down there, they're going to sue the district. How dare you cut my child, even though your child, you know, never actually even practiced once. It's we want to give them everything. We don't want to make them suffer at all. And it's actually making our children, you know, really, it's contributing to a lot of the behavioral issues we see today.
Yes, and it's just becoming, as you said, a greater and greater problem, and parents do need a specific game plan. And I would highly advise all parents to look at Reconnected Kids. And like you said, this book, if anything, is more general, not only about children who have something that can be diagnosed, but all kinds of difficulties in parenting, which a lot of which are modern issues that actually did not exist 20 or 30 years ago.
Absolutely. And the other thing in the book that I think people will really like is when we talk about empowerment, kind of took a little bit of a page from the book, The Secret, because what we found, again, was with all of the modern struggles that are not only contributing to problems in families and increasing stress and all these stress-related illnesses that you work with so effectively, we find that people are really struggling and families are more struggling. And so what I wanted to do was I put in the book a lot of my own personal things as to help parents to be able to set and achieve very specific goals. And I gave them very practical tools as to how to do that so that they can reconnect with their goals, reconnect with their dreams.
Well, thank you so much for that, Dr. Melillo. We're actually at the end of our hour, and I know people can find all of your books on Amazon.com. And what's another way to get in touch with you or find out more information about your work?
Our website is brainbalancecenters.com, and they can email me there, or they could always get in touch with it, or if they want to find out where we have any centers or lectures going on, they can go to that website.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you, listeners, for joining us once again right here on Gary Knowles Network, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can find us at naturalnurse.com, and you can listen to any show by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, click on Archives, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, hoping that you stay healthy.